Good evening. Welcome, everyone, to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Lygia, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Lygia.
For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with a serenity prayer. God,
grant me serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. I will now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open, big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step we're discussing tonight. This evening, we're discussing steps 8 and 9. Please welcome our panel, Amy and Harmony. I'll give them a chance to introduce themselves after their reading. I will read the first paragraph on page 76, and then the panel will share for a few minutes each on the reading. Turn to page 76. Now we need more action, without which we find that faith without works is dead. Let's look at steps 8 and 9. We have made a list of all persons we have harmed and to whom we are willing to make amends. We made it when we took inventory. We subjected ourselves to a drastic self-appraisal. Now we go out to our fellows and repair the damage done in our past. We attempt to sweep away the debris which has accumulated out of our effort to live on self-will and run the show ourselves. If we haven't the will to do this, we ask until it comes. Remember, it was agreed at the beginning we would go to any lengths for victory over alcohol. Ladies.
I'm Harmony. I'm an alcoholic.
Harmony.
Very grateful to be here. When I came out of my fourth step, my sponsor had been writing things down during my entire fourth step, and she wrote down a list of my most glaring defects, as well as a list of people that are likely to be on my amends list. It doesn't mean that I didn't work on the list myself. I did, but she had a general idea of like what she thought that these were the people that I would need to make amends to, as well as institutions, because I did a lot of shoplifting. And I remember looking at that list, and it was very scary to think of what it would be like to have to go through with some of those amends and talk to some of those people and those businesses face to face and do those things. But I I can't say that it's my experience that there were any that I was like, I'm absolutely not doing that. That wasn't my experience. I've definitely had more in my later years of sobriety, more people that I've not wanted to make amends to. Usually people in AA that I don't want to make amends to. So I had accumulated so much damage from my self-will and from running the show myself, and my sponsor, I was ready for it to be swept away. Like, I was definitely looking at that list. I was overwhelmed with how was I going to change. Yeah, I kind of knew and heard, and from what my sponsor was saying, that was going to be what it would entail. I was actually going to have to change. And that's what I was the most freaked out about, is yes, going face to face, but then after that, I was really going to have to behave differently. That's all I have to share on that.
Thanks. Mm-hmm. My name is Amy, and I'm an alcoholic. And I have had really powerful experiences with Step 8. It has not just been making a list only from my fourth step. It is something that comes from a sponsor as feedback from step 5, but also as I go through step 6 and step 7, I see how my story about myself has changed now that I've done step 4 and 5, and I see the harms that I have done. That I could always see the harms of commission, but the harms of omission, I started becoming really aware of those in step 6 and 7, the things I should have done, but I did not. I think that my spirit had been quickened in those first 7 steps, and I became aware of where I had been wrong. And like every other step, step 8, done with a sponsor, going through each thing, determining, is this really a harm? Is anybody else going to get thrown under the bus while I'm doing this? Is somebody else involved in this? Is this an appropriate time or even situation to say, is there anything that you need to tell me about what I've done? Sometimes that's a great, miraculous, beautiful unfolding. Other times that is full on leading with the chin. And so just like every other step, when I have a full eighth step in place, I almost, the work is done because it's been done inside of me. I have felt free as a result of step 8, even before going face to face with other people, because the transformation has taken place. And once I'm convicted on the inside of the harms I've done, and that as a child of God, as the actor with him, the director, as the spearhead of his ever-advancing creation, what I must do is go to these people. And I'm not doing it so that I can feel better. I mean, feeling better was the whole problem. That's why I had to get loaded, was because I wanted to feel better all the time. So that's not what's going on. And just like when I'm really current in step 1, there's nowhere for me to go but step 2. When I'm current in step 8, there's nowhere for me to go but step 9. And by the time I'm looking someone in the face, all the real work, God's work in me, has taken place. I had LASIK surgery between 10 and 15 years ago. And I happened to be the one in 0.00095% that it causes blindness. And I am completely blind in my left eye. So if I act like I don't know who you are, I probably can't see you. Anyway, which is good in situations like this because it's just fuzz. But it also means if you see me in a car, get out of the way. But I was out of my mind with fear over having this happen. And I thought that the white light bulbs in my house, I thought that they were too dim. I went out and bought all new light bulbs. I thought that it was my age and I needed reading glasses. I tried that. Finally, there was no other conclusion but something's wrong with my eye. I mean, I go through that process with everything. I mean, I'd have a DUI, screaming friends, carnage, blood, everything, before I realized I am an alcoholic. But anyway, I took everyone in this I place hostage to my fear. I did. When I went in there and they kept moving me from room to room, test to test, as the day went on, my fear was getting greater and greater and greater. And at the end of it, I actually stood out in the middle of the hallway of this big place and said, screamed, actually, who do I have to copulate with to see a doctor? Who is going to do something about this? And they told me that I was just one of those ones, that I was going blind and I would have to have corneal transplants. And I immediately found an attorney. And I found an attorney in New York City who specialized in this post-LASIK ectasia, which was the condition that I have. And for about a year, I really worked on this resentment and worked with the attorney and made a journal and went through all this stuff. And it was it coincided with the time of doing the steps. And certainly this place, every doctor, every staff member was on my resentment list. And I am quite sure that at the end of this period of time, that when anyone saw my name appear on the schedule for the day, they were like, Amy Kitchen, I'm calling in sick. or you know, would do anything to avoid having to be on the wrong side of my tongue. And after a year of planning what I was going to do with I don't remember what the cap was on medical malpractice, but it was at least $1 million. After a year of deciding what I was going to do with the money, nurturing this resentment like it was my precious child, it came to me in prayer and meditation, doing a step eight, that doctor was not in charge of my eyes. My higher power was. And it just was gone. It was just gone. All of my fear, because reading is my favorite thing, I love movies with subtitles, all of my fears, all of the ruination of my life in the world according to Amy that was going to unfold because of this eye thing, it was just gone. And I could not wait to go into that doctor's office and say to the doctor, here's what's been going on with me. I apologize to you, and if you could get your staff together, which they didn't want to come, so that was not going to happen. I ended up writing a letter, and they read it out loud at a staff meeting and posted on the staff board about how I was so sorry for disrupting the flow, for all of the crap that I had done. I mean, basically, if you had asked me anything about my eyes, I would tell you, yeah, that doctor, blah, 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 at blah, 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 the evil eye empire, never go there. And I've got a big mouth. I mean, I mouthed off about this. And it just went away. It was just gone. And it was gone before I ever faced them. I mean, it was nice after I faced them. But it was gone in step eight. The other big experiences that I've had in step eight are being sure after 4, 5, 6, and 7 that I need to go make an amends, but discovering in the course of that prior work that really what I'm trying to do is ease my conscience, and what I'm going to do is increase the burden of another person. I have been a person in the past who would say I'm sorry whether I meant it or not, just because, you know, it's one of those things that just... it clears the decks. It's kind of like having sex after an argument. It just puts it to rest, or you don't have to think about it anymore. And I would say, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. And I never really meant it. I was just saying it. And so I really, with a sponsor, I can't stress enough the importance of doing step eight, not just slam it out a list based for my resentment inventory, but going over it to find out if it's really a harm, if it is something that will not injure others. And I was also told that I am not one of the them, you know, if it will not injure them or others. I am not on the them list. Anyway, let's go on.
Thank you. We're going to continue on page 76. Probably there are still some misgivings as we look over the list of business acquaintances and friends we have hurt. We may feel diffident about going to some of them on a spiritual basis. Let us be reassured. To some people, we need not and probably should not emphasize the spiritual feature on our first approach. We might prejudice them. At the moment, we are trying to put our lives in order, but this is not an end in itself. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. It is seldom wise to approach an individual who still smarts from our injustice to him and announce that we've gone religious. In the prize ring, this would be called leading with the chin. Why lay ourselves open to being branded fanatics or religious bores? We may kill a future opportunity to carry a beneficial message, but our man is sure to be impressed with a sincere desire to set right the wrong. He's going to be more interested in the demonstration of good will than in our talk of spiritual discoveries.
There's a couple of things that I think about when I read this paragraph, and the first being one of our traditions is that it's attraction rather than promotion. And the second is the line that Bill, from Bill's story, where he says, "And here was a man whose whole deportment shouted that he was a man with a real answer." And that was something that he saw just from looking. I think it's Bill's story. Anyway,
there is a solution.
There is a solution. Yeah, that they when he saw this person, there is, like, it's there in your face. Like, God is there in my face. He's in my eye contact. He's in the way that I speak in a kind and loving and apologetic tone. And so it is not something that I have to pronounce or tell people. But one of the things that's really hard when I was new is that, like, I just felt like such a loser all the time. Like, I wouldn't have been able to enunciate this at the time, but I felt like I had to apologize for my existence, you know? And then I felt like I had to defend, like, and prove how that I was doing things differently. And really my you could see it on my face that I was different. And it wasn't something that I had to advertise or that I had to tell the people that I made amends to. One of the things I was uncomfortable with and had a couple of conversations with my sponsor was even telling them that I was in AA. I wanted to be able to go and tell them that I had seen the light and that I was better now and I'm sorry for everything that I've done for you without the little AA part, you know. And she said that I had to tell them that I was in AA. And she was a stickler about that because she came into AA because somebody made amends to her. An old boyfriend of hers came to her and said, and made amends to her. And that was the first time she couldn't, he even paid money back to her. And she couldn't believe that he had done that. And it was at the, it was a time where she was hitting bottom, and she turned to AA and she was able to get sober. And that is the whole point of this step nine. Not necessarily that other people will get sober, but my job in this whole process is to try and be of maximum service to God. If I have a bunch of people running out there mad at me, then it's going to be really hard for me to be of service to them or to be one of the links of the chain for them to get here or to get what they need or for me to even be a voice. I don't believe I can help all people. I'm sure there are some out there that I really should just stay away from, and they can find help however they want or through somebody else. But for the most part, God needs me to be kind of a neutral party that he can rely upon on any time to tap on the shoulder and say, "Go get him," and can you help me reel this person in, whether it's into the program or even in on a bad day? And I don't think that I am a religious fanatic. I definitely believe in God, and God has saved me through Alcoholics Anonymous. But at the time, I was very evangelical about AA in the early years, and I was more than happy to tell you that you had a problem with alcohol, and that and AA can solve all your problems. And that was not the point of any of my amends, was to do any of those things. It was for me to take responsibility for my behavior. But one of the things I did say when I was making appointments with people is, "I'm doing this because of AA." And the hardest one for me was, I went to JCPenney's where I stole a bunch of stuff. I would return stuff and take the cash out of the register to drink. So I went to JCPenney's, and it was really a small amount on the big scale of things. But I said, can I speak to one of the managers? And I had my manager's name. And the secretary said, sure, you can. They're about to start a manager's meeting. She said, go in. And so I'm like, I'm Harmony. I used to work here, and I used to return stuff for cash. Like, but I'm an Alcoholics Anonymous now, and here's your money or whatever, in front of a whole boardroom of managers. And now it is a funny story, and there wasn't anything that miraculously happened about that. But the hardest part of that one little piece was to tell them all that I was in AA. But I don't know what the ripple effect of that is going to be down the line. And it's not my business to get in the way of that for God. And every individual can decide for themselves what they're comfortable with and talk to their sponsor about it. But that was one of the things that was a sticking point for my sponsor at the time, was to make sure that I told them that I was an AA, and it was the 12-step program was the reason why I was going about doing this.
Thanks. When I first got to this, I had a sponsor who explained it to me as, you know, what the amendments to the Constitution are. There are articles added on that make some kind of fundamental change. And so this is what needs to be happening to you. An amendment to my basic constitution needs to be taking place. So that also makes step 8 be something that has got to be done with a sponsor. It has got to be done making use of prayer and meditation, because I just kind of, you know, I'd been rolling around in the mud, and I wanted to get cleaned up and move on to the next episode of my life. And if I had done that, I certainly would have been going to people saying that I was sorry. And I probably was sorry. I mean, I'd been a sorrowful soul my whole life. But it would have had nothing to do with an amendment to my constitution. And the way that stays real for me now on a daily basis is that I'm always current in those first three steps. And this doing step 8, doing step 9, this is how I turn my will and my life over. If my will are my thoughts and my life are my actions, this is how I do step 3, is by becoming willing to do the rest of the process, to do this work, to follow the same rules that everybody else does. Because I really don't think I need to follow the same rules as everybody else, because I'm smarter than the person that made the rules. I think rules are for dumb people who don't know anything else to do with themselves. And I kind of like to float above the law. And that was not something that really ever worked out for me. It certainly didn't work out for me in the eyes of the law. But it was not something that worked out for me as far as who I am on the inside. That's why I had to keep getting loaded, because it didn't feel good to screw everybody over all the time. And so I come to step 8 with that. It doesn't feel good for me to lash out at someone and then not do something about it. And again, it's not so that I can feel better. It's so that I can fit myself to be of maximum service. I heard somebody recently talk about how they didn't know why, when they earnestly asked for their defects of character to be removed, that they weren't removed. Well, I do know why. It's my defects of character that make me attractive to the newcomer or all the other people in the room that have the same little set of horns that I've got. I don't want to talk to somebody. I don't even want to sit next to somebody who's perfect. That's no fun. And so I have these defects of character because it keeps me learning. The bottle was just a symptom. And if that was all that had ever been wrong with me, I wouldn't still be sitting here. I wouldn't still be desperately seeking God, because I wouldn't be aware one day at a time of how much of an alcoholic I am, how deliciously sick in so many ways I am. And if I weren't that way, I wouldn't need God. I wouldn't need you. I would just be fixed, and I'd go on my way rejoicing, which has yet to happen. That's all I'll say now.
Thank you. We're going to continue now on page 77. We don't use this as an excuse for shying away from the subject of God. When it will serve any good purpose, we are willing to announce our convictions with tact and common sense. The question of how to approach the man we hated will arise. It may be he has done us more harm than we have done him, and though we may have acquired a better attitude toward him, we are still not keen about admitting our faults. Nevertheless, with a person we dislike, we take the bit in our teeth. It is harder to go to an enemy than to a friend, but we find it much more beneficial to us. We go to him in a helpful and forgiving spirit, confessing our former ill feeling and expressing our regret.
From my initial eight-step list, there wasn't really anybody that I hated or that I didn't want to go to. Like I said, it has come over years. Like, there have been people in AA that I haven't respected, and that I've made it very clear that I don't respect them, and I had a tendency to let it come out of my mouth at certain times. I don't have a ton of control just in general. Like, it may sound like an excuse, but I have just like a mouth that if I'm not in the best spiritual condition at any possible time, then it will come out of my mouth. And so I have to work on my resentments very hard just so that they don't come out of my mouth. And so that I don't say things that people like, as much as I feel entitled to, it's not right, it's not kind, it's not loving to take people's inventory ever, you know? And so the amends that I've had to make are when I've done those things. Like, there was a woman, and who knows what she was going through at the time. Like, her husband was probably cheating on her, actually. And we used to go play volleyball every Saturday with a bunch of people where I got sober in LA. And this woman was always like, she kind of rode me, and it was just how the old timers did it. They always did that kind of stuff, and there was like, I'd get made fun of or whatever, or they just like, they'd talk down to you all the time, it seemed like to me. And one day I just let this woman have it with a few F-bombs, and I had, you know, we had to pay if we had F-bombs or whatever. And I remember going and talking to my sponsor, and I always feel remorse. I feel a ton of remorse after I do that, because I deep down in my core, I don't believe it's right to treat people that way, and I can't live up to my own morals. So I had no choice, and she said, you know what you have to do. And so I had to go to this woman, and I had to say, you know what, I'm sorry that I turned a little thing that I blew up at you. And like, and then I had to listen to a 15-minute speech about how when I get more sober, I'll understand what it's like, and blah, blah, blah. You know, and she may have been right, but I had to sit there, and I had to be quiet, and I had to smile, and I had to say, yes, ma'am. And otherwise, I was going to have to make another amends for my amends. Like, I was like, I am not doing that, or whatever. So I have had a handful of things like that, and it's come to play in my own life. You know, my mother-in-law and I have gotten into a few tiffs over parenting my children, and the hardest, like, she does not apologize back. So I have to go and say, I'm sorry, blah, 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 and then I have to list, like, yeah, that, like, I don't know what was wrong with you that day, you know, but the point is for me to be on a spiritual plane, you know, like the point, it is not about me like groveling before anybody. It's about me having a clear spiritual conscience, and so that I can go about living my day without garbage, like this garbage that weighs me down and occupies my thoughts and prevents me from being of service the way that I need to be in my life.
I have definitely made amends before I was ready or before I had talked it over with my sponsor that went horribly awry. And I just ended up unloading on them and taking their inventory. And then they did not want me to come back again for a double dip. And so part of growing up in this program for me has been that I can't always get to a place of ease and comfort, even when it comes to step 8 and 9. Sometimes I just have to be an adult and I have to suck it up. And I have made amends to people who have said, you know, that's great, but don't darken my doorstep again. I have had to make amends to groups when I was absolutely sure it was God's will for me to steer the boat in a certain direction. And all I succeeded in doing was turning everyone off to whatever party line I was pushing at the time, and then have to call people up the next day. It is definitely harder to do an amends to people in recovery. I have also had a horrible problem in the past with gossip. And how it was told to me was that gossip is like sneaking over to somebody's house in the middle of the night with a ball of feathers and putting it on their front lawn. And by the next morning, the wind has taken the feathers to all parts of the earth, and there is just no getting them back, which means that I can't really go to somebody and say, I've really been talking trash about you, and I feel horrible about it. I mean, one, it's going to injure them. Two, it's going to injure others. And three, it's just not one of those things that can get cleaned up completely. And so there's another opportunity for me to grow up, for me to have to bear the burden of my behavior, for me to have to bear the burden that these are the consequences, that I feel out of sorts, that I don't get to feel all cleaned up in the inside, which comes, you know, more to there's a long period of reconstruction ahead. But reconstruction started really fast for me because I was in a lot of trouble when I got here, and I had to skedaddle to keep myself out of places that I didn't want to end up. And so I am a compulsive shoplifter. I have had to go to places and say, what's interesting though is that a lot of people, they get really uncomfortable with, they were uncomfortable with me coming to them and saying, here's what I did. I don't know if it highlights, you know, holes in their security. I don't really know what it is. But I've had a lot of people that were kind of like, just okay, pay the money back, okay. Just kind of get away from me as quickly as possible. And although I have never had a sponsor who was a strong proponent of living amends, because that can so often kind of devolve down into, well, I don't have to face them, but I'm doing a living amends. I'm just living a better life, and that's how I'm making the amends to them. I mean, it does say direct, and my experience is that every single word in the first 164 pages of the big book is the exact word that it's supposed to be for an exact, precise reason. And so direct means direct. But when I have had to do amends that were indirect, I mean, I have had experiences where people did not want to lay eyes on me. And so I had to contact someone that knew them and ask them, you know, will you please contact so-and-so and find out how they are willing to be approached by me? I mean, I don't have the right just to go barging into people's lives and stirring stuff up. I also don't have the right to take a list of all of the men that I have had, you know, irresponsible encounters with and go knocking on their door and apologize for being irresponsible, because I am just still devilish enough that that's going to end up in me getting laid. And that's going to be my solution to whatever the problem du jour is to crawl into some man's bed and then amends is out the window because I'm kind of really back in the disease. I so often have heard that step 8 is just taking a list from your 4-step, and it is so much more than that. I mean, time, place, exact circumstances. I could not make an amends to one of my sisters, and she had gone out of the country for some extended travel, and I probably could not have made an amends to her at the time that I was cycling through that. And she returned from the country, from where, I think she was in New Zealand. But she came back. I was living in Florida, and I knew from my other sister that she had come back. But I was thinking, well, I'm in Florida. She's in Virginia Beach. I got a little more time on this. And I was walking into a restaurant, and she was down there for Final Four basketball. And, I mean, there she was. They're 1,000 miles from home. And it was obvious to me that now is the time to make this amends. This is how God is directing me. It's not always as obvious as that, but a lot of times it is. I mean, I have found that God's economy is so much better than mine. I mean, things are very harsh, and there's a hard line on how I imagine things need to be unfold. How they're supposed to turn out. But my higher power always sets them up in a very gentle way. It's like there's no gravity. I just have to step into it. I just have to float along with it. I just really have to be willing.
Okay. Thank you. We're going to continue on page 77. Under no condition do we criticize such a person or argue. Simply, we tell him that we will never get over drinking until we have done our utmost to straighten out the past. We are there to sweep off our side of the street, realizing that nothing worthwhile can be accomplished until we do so, never trying to tell him what he should do. His faults are not discussed. We stick to our own. If our manner is calm, frank, and open, we will be gratified with the result. In 9 cases out of 10, the unexpected happens. Sometimes the man we are calling upon admits his own fault, so feuds of years' standing melt away in an hour. Rarely do we fail to make satisfactory progress. Our former enemies sometimes praise what we are doing and wish us well. Occasionally, they will offer assistance. It should not matter, however, if someone does throw us out of his office. We have made our demonstration, done our part. It's water over the dam.
I have to apologize. I'm like, no flour, no sugar, no dairy for like way too long, like 3 weeks. I don't even know what's coming out of my mouth anymore. But I desperately never wanted to drink again. And like Amy said, you know, it was definitely a process of really coming to understand what my harms were. And some of that was from the beating I took from steps 6 and 7. It wasn't just that I took the book down from the shelf and I said the prayer and that was it. After that, then it seemed like my character defects were everywhere, and I was effing up all over the place all the time, and it was so in my face that I needed to be a better person, or that I needed to recover from these defects. And I did not have a lot of personal power to rise above some of them at times. And that caused me to become willing to make amends to the people that were harmed by all of this stuff. And it was definitely a process. And I know in this area, we're not really keen on 12 by 12, but I read the 8-step in the 12 by 12 a lot, because it gives really detailed instructions about what is a harm and what is not in there. And got a lot of guidance from my sponsor it was definitely beat into my head that it was just about cleaning up my side of the street. And like I said, the hardest ones for that, like for cleaning up my side of the street, were, you know, my mom and my dad, because I definitely had an idea of all the things that they should have done and that they could have done better. And so it was, you know, whenever I seem to get into deep conversations with them, even sometimes now, right? Yeah, like even sometimes now, it's really hard not to get into, well, if you would have blah, 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 you know, like, and really stay like straight on what's my part. And, you know, no matter what was going on with my parents during my childhood, like Harmony was crazy, you know, like Harmony took a like maybe nutty situation and made it absolutely bizarre or dangerous for everybody else, you know. And I'm the one that always took it to a severe escalation. And so talking, it started with talking to them, like sitting down and talking to both of my parents. And both of them really wanted to kind of just dismiss me and say, it's all right, you know, you're doing wonderful, we love you. You know, they're like, both of them were very much that way. Neither one of them wanted to take any money. And from there, I had to set about to try and be different. And it was really, really hard. I can say that, like, I wanted to, I wanted to take their inventories every time I talked to them for 10 years. And I'm sorry if you're new and that makes you want to shoot yourself, but that's the truth, is that it was that hard for me to show up and live a spiritual principle. And I picked neutral subjects in which I would talk to them about, because I felt like certain subjects were going to go south really quick, like religion with my dad. And then I was screwed, because then it would turn into a tiff, and next thing you know, I would be calling back and saying I'm sorry again for taking their part, not paying attention at whatsoever to my part. And my first sponsor used to tell me all the time, when it came to my mom and dad, it was to be a good daughter. My job is to be a good daughter to them. Like, what would a good daughter do? If I could wave a magic wand and make me, and I be the perfect, most perfect person. And the goal is not for me to be perfect, but that is the ideal that I can set out for. Is like, if I was a daughter that didn't have any emotional problems or any resentments or whatever, well, how does a good daughter act? Act that way and your feelings will follow. And that's exactly what did happen. I can say that it was not too long ago that, I guess it was like maybe 5 or 6 years ago now, that like it was one day, one magic day, like it was like God touched me with a magic wand, and the resentment against my mom was gone. Totally gone, evaporated, to the point where, you know, I was able to live with her. You know, like, she's my, almost one of my best buddies now. I can pal around with her, and it would be misleading for you to think that that is the way that it always been, because it was actually really almost, it was so hard for me to stay out of trouble and to practice the spiritual principles in my relationship with my parents for a really long time.
I did have a lot of people that I did not, that I hated, that I did not want to go to, that I was very afraid of. And that line, 9 out of 10 will not go, that I really clung to that, that, you know, 90% of these things are going to be better than I think they're going to be. But what really made the difference for me was that I was told to do the amends first that I'm willing to do, and that I will get the power that I need to do the rest from the experiences that I have in the first ones that I do. And that is true with working all of the steps for me, that I get the power that I need to go on. I mean, what was absolutely anathema to me at step one, that I was going to sit down with somebody and tell them, you know, what a dirty dog I am, I could not imagine that. But then I do step three, and I have come to believe that there is a loving God, that I am living in grace, that it's not, this is, none of this is about earning it. I can't earn it. This is about turning my will. That's really good. Earning, turning, not earning. Anyway, somebody write that down. I've lost my train of thought. What was I saying?
Turning it.
Yeah, before that.
Getting the power from this stuff.
So the stuff that I thought at the beginning I could never do, each step I get the power. And that's what's so important for me about working the steps directly out of the big book, is that this isn't about transmitting information. I don't read the steps or talk about the steps and think that I'm working the steps. I follow these directions, and it produces an experience for me. When I'm in step one, all I can see is how powerless I am. All I can see is that my life managed by me is crap. When I'm in step two, I see my insanity everywhere. I see my absolute need for a power greater than my own. I'm willing to believe that there is a power greater than my own. And it goes on that way. And in step eight, I became willing as I was doing this work, as I was talking about this list with a sponsor, as I was taking each name or each situation into prayer and meditation. Sometimes it's very obvious. Other times, not so obvious. I had the police and the judges and the Republicans and a whole pile of stuff like that on my fourth step. And, I mean, what was I going to do? And so what my sponsor directed me to do in those cases was, you know, every time you see a cop car, don't automatically say, oh, I really hate the cops. Every time you go to court for yourself or for someone else, conduct yourself honorably. Look as good as you can. Be as calm and kind as you can. I mean, those things are not things that I would automatically come up with because, I mean, I hope nobody's a cop, but I do hate the cops. And I really do hate anybody that has authority that I don't think they earn. But anyway.
Okay.
But those things do change in me as I continue to do. The cop thing hasn't gone away. But the other stuff, it really has now that I'm talking about it. But the other stuff, I don't automatically, you know, my head doesn't go up in flames. If you've got right-wing opinions, I mean, I'll probably think that you're dumb. But no, I don't automatically blow up. My resentments were exactly like my alcoholism. If the thought occurred to me that I needed a drink, done. I was having a drink. That think, or make a phone call before you drink, that never worked for me. Once the thought was in my head, I was drinking. I wasn't calling anyone at all. I didn't want to be talked out of it. The thought was there. It was as good as done. Today, the resentment, my first thought may be, you know, blah, blah, blah. But I don't have to act on it. I don't have to act out on it. And unfolding from there, I then don't have to eat something or, you know, buy something to save myself from the feeling that I just acted out on this resentment. So it all is constant. I am constantly being transformed from the inside out. And a lot of that stuff is against my will because I think it's kind of funny that, you know, there are certain things that I hate, and I feel kind of superior about the fact that I hate them. So I can't tell you that I have a will for that to be transformed. But I do have certainly quite a will never to have to drink again. And so that makes me open to this process and whatever it is that happens to me in this process. I mean, I've been transformed in ways that were certainly not what I would have wanted. I mean, I pretty much wanted to just rule the world, and I thought that is what God should do with me because I have the talent for it. Why not? That is not at all what happened. Not at all. I don't even rule my own home. But thank God for that, and thank God for the way that it has happened. So what I'm saying is, as long as I have the willingness, even if all I can muster up is a 1%, this process will always give me the power because I'm working these steps to get access to that power, to clear away the things that block me from that power, my resentment, my fear, my self-centeredness, my self-seeking motives. I mean, I'm just polluted all over the place. I really am. But as long as I continue doing this, it keeps getting better and better. And when I look back on it, you know, I'm not pissed off that I turned into Pollyanna or whoever. I can be grateful about that.
Okay. We have two more readings. Perhaps we'll split them between
you. You said to make it long.
Page 78. Most alcoholics owe money. We do not dodge our creditors, telling them what we're trying to do. We make no bones about our drinking. They usually know it anyway, whether we think so or not. Nor are we afraid of disclosing our alcoholism on the theory it may cause financial harm. Approached in this way, the most ruthless creditor will sometimes surprise us. Arranging the best deal we can, we let these people know we're sorry. Our drinking has made us slow to pay. We must lose our fear of creditors no matter how far we have to go, for we are liable to drink if we are afraid to face them.
It doesn't matter. If you don't want that, I'll do it.
It's fine. Okay. I'm I actually had a lot of financial amends to make. It seems bizarre considering I was 18 that I got sober, but I, like I said, I did a ton of shoplifting, and one of the ones that really stung was I cleaned out my dad's. He had a wooden box that he kept on his dresser, and I cleaned out a bunch of quarters out of it, and they were all silver quarters. And those were the type of that one is one that stung for a really, really long time, like because it was just such a crappy thing to do. But I used to rummage through people's stuff all the time. Everybody else's stuff was my stuff, and I actually even did it when I was early in AA and people were letting me stay on their couch. I would go through their stuff, and I didn't look at it as stealing. I was like, I need a Q-tip, or I need a bus money, or whatever. What else was I supposed to do? I don't have a job, you know? Like, so, and I actually remember coming back home for one of those, and they said, Harmony, did you go through this change jar? And I was like, yeah, I did, or whatever. And that, they still let me stay there. That's just one of the miracles of Alcoholics Anonymous to me, is that they gave me a second chance. They just said, hey, we don't go through our stuff. Anyway, so those are the type of things that I had to make amends for, and I had no money. I lived in a one-room apartment in Los Angeles. I did not have a car. I was a student. I did not make very much money at all, and my sponsor helped me out with figuring out how much to pay, and there were some of them that I only paid like $5 a month to, and that was really hard for me. I wanted to be able to go in with full checks. I mean, it was really hard for me to come in there and say, here, I can't even pay $200. You know, I can pay this. And it was also really hard for me to spend those years where I was paying back my amends and doing other things to say no to all the other things that I had to say no to, like concerts, clothes, whatever it was that I really wanted to spend my money on, and to spend it on other things. And there was an old timer that, if you ever get to hear his tape, Vince Yeo, he talks about financial honesty. And the truth of the matter is that the money that I would have been spending, it's their money, it's not my money. And so I really had to pray and change how I was thinking, and really learn to let go of financial stuff. I bought all of my clothes at thrift stores, and I used to be kind of ashamed that they were mismatched or used or whatever it was, and I was that way for a really long time, but I felt ashamed about it. But at the same time, like, those things that I look back now were so invaluable to me, because I learned this level of humility and this level of the outside stuff not really mattering. Like, I was, people loved me and cared for me and wanted me around and wanted to hang out with me, and it really had nothing to do with what I wore or whatever. Like, I might not have been attracting the most, like, the wealthiest guys or whatever, but at least I was, I had integrity. And looking down at my current job, the thing that is most valuable to them, I believe, like, number one is work ethic. Number two is integrity. They can come to me and they can ask me a question, like, what happened with this patient? And I can tell them, and they will know they are getting the truth. And it's, and all of, like, most of the people that I work with are the same way. And I've worked with shady doctors and shady nurses where they're lying, and they're, you know, like, and they're not doing the right things or whatever. And to, and for my current employer, it is so valuable to them that they can, that they know they are going to get the right story, and my word is gold, you know. And and it's something that they can therefore then go tell their attorneys about, and it's, and that we can protect our practice based off of that. So that these skills are not just something that helped me through NAA and helped me to stay sober. They've given me a really good life. Now, with that being said, like, I have to tell you guys that I the last time I was up here, I lied or exaggerated on a story. Like, I told this story about this guy that I had a major crush on, and in the end, the punchline is that he was gay. And what later when I got home, I was like, you know, if he actually really heard that story, his feelings might be hurt by that, because it's not like the dude has ever come out. He's never been married. He's always had like a bunch of, anyway, it's not, it doesn't matter. Like, his sexuality, like, is not the point of the story. The point was that Harmony's will was that this guy was going to be my boyfriend, and it didn't work out that way. And I've actually had the reverse happen to me in AA, where a sponsee of mine, we were both called like homosexuals because my sponsee didn't want to go out with this guy in AA. And it's like, so to put a twist on that, like, it's just something that I can't live with, and can't walk away from the podium like not telling the whole truth on that. So that's how I'm going to end.
Thank you, Amy. On page 79 for you. Oh. Although these reparations take innumerable forms, there are some general principles which we find guiding. Reminding ourselves that we have decided to go to any lengths to find a spiritual experience, we ask that we be given strength and direction to do the right thing, no matter what the personal consequences may be. We may lose our position or reputation or face jail, but we are willing. We have to be. We must not shrink at anything.
I definitely did not want to do the finance one, and that makes me think that maybe I should say something about that. I will be 49 years old in another week, and I am gainfully employed for just about the first time in my entire life by someone other than a family member. I have not been self-supporting, and the lies that I've had to tell myself in order to stay self-supporting, like, it's okay, I have a rich family, it's okay that I've taken cash out of every cash register in every business that we own because it's my money anyway. It's okay that I don't work because I'm available to go shopping with my mom whenever she wants. It's okay that I'm a grown woman and I don't have health insurance. All of those things have played into me not wanting to make financial amends, because at the back of my mind, I was thinking, well, my mom's going to die. I'll get my trust fund. I'll work it out. And what a way to avoid taking responsibility for myself, which is what this is all about. And I have a very rapidly rebuilding ego. So staying in this work of making reparations, even if, I mean, Harmony, you're awesome. I wish I had a story like that to tell. I mean, I have not made sacrifices financially so that I could pay people back, or that I could do the right thing. And so the paragraph about reparations and living with different values, what I can say is that today I have a job, and I'm kind of self-employed, so I get to make my own schedule, which is probably the only way it would have to be for me, because I just can't have anyone be the boss of me. But I show up when I'm supposed to. I do what I am paid to do. And I recently had a boss say that he wanted me to do a log book of what hours I spent on certain things and turn it in. And my first thought was, I'm quitting. I'm not doing that. I'm not doing that. And then I thought about it and I thought, wait a minute. I'm not going to tell him what I'm doing that he's paying me for? Who am I? Who do I think I am? I mean, who I am is an alcoholic. And those kind of attitudes, that lawlessness, and I don't have to do what everybody else does, that for me is at the bottom of step 8 and of step 9. I'm learning to grow up and not be a Toys R Us kid forever. It is not my job in life just to have fun and be at ease and comfort all the time. So that's it.
Thank you. Thank these ladies very much. The self-support green card. The seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. Are there any AA-related announcements? Okay, I'd just like to welcome you all to our supper and a speaker meeting on Monday, March 7th. Right here, we're at 6 p.m. will be potluck, 7 o'clock. Mark G. will be here from Richmond. We have blue flyers. You're welcome to them. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, will you raise your hands? Newcomers, is there anyone in the first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you. Okay, wait, literature is available. Please see me, it's right over there on the table, or any home group members after the meeting, if you're interested. Sponsorship. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. Anyone willing to be a sponsor, please raise your hand.
I'm just going to have to give a dollar.
If you have questions, you'd like any additional information about sponsorship, please come and see me after the meeting. I'd love to talk to you. We have reminders. Smokers, please use the butt cam provided outside. Stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. In closing, we'd like to thank the panel, Amy and Harmony, for sharing.
Thank you both.
Thanks to all who participated. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue this conversation on the step discussed tonight at the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Plaza del Sol, 2 blocks up the street on Colonial. Can I have a volunteer to read the last two paragraphs on page 164?
My name is Devin. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Devin.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who's still sick. The answers will come if you own your own. If your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is a great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thank you. Would you like to join us and close the meeting with the Lord's Prayer?
Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not to temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever.